So Rick Alvis is here, and Rick, come on up, and we'll put a couple of chairs together. We'll make sure there's some social distancing, so you don't need to wear your mask. I usually prefer to social distance from Rick, even when COVID-19 is not taking place. Is this one okay, Alan? So Rick Alvis is the CEO of Wheeler Mission, and how long, Rick? How long have you been at?
It's 30 years.
30 years, so a long time there at Wheeler Mission. And we've had a partnership with Wheeler now. I won't make you guess. I'll try to guess. Almost about that same amount of time in one way or another, right?
Yeah.
So similar to what you just now saw with Sasha and Olga, we just want to get a little bit of information from Rick. Obviously, as we talk about Wheeler Mission, we're talking about more local missions here in Indianapolis, although Wheeler Mission has expanded beyond that, and I'll let Rick talk a little bit more about that. But maybe the first way to start is similar to the last interview, Rick, and that is tell us a little bit about the ministry. Tell us what's been taking place over the last few years, some of the major projects that might be taking place, and kind of what ministry has been like this year for you.
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride, that's for sure, for 30 years. I never thought I'd be here more than 3 years. So 30 years is a long, 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 long time. And we've seen lots and lots of change through the years. But one of the things we've been consistent with is, you know, basically sharing the gospel of Christ. That's what Wheeler has been known for 127 years now, and will continue to be sharing the gospel. And that's, I think that's kind of unique because, you know, not only can we shelter people, can we feed people, but we can actually share the gospel. And, you know, it's just amazing of how people respond to the gospel and to teaching in their own lives. And so the Lord has really done some great things through Wheeler the last several years. And we've seen a lot of change, of course, a lot of cultural changes that we've had to adapt to and change with, but yet never compromising the gospel. And we're just one of the few organizations in town that's been able to do that. So often we get a lot of pressure to change. We get pressure to change our hiring, you know, policies. We get changes to, to take in different kinds of people, especially when you go to the transgender and all this stuff that we've had to deal with. But yet we've stayed true. And so it's been interesting because God has certainly seen it through for us to be able to do that and weather a lot of storms that I see in other cities that some organizations aren't weathering very well. And how we've been able to stay above the fray of some of this stuff has only got to be a God thing. It really does. God has put us in a unique position in the city to be able to communicate that gospel, but yet not compromise it and not compromise any of our own culture within Wheeler. So, we've seen new programs start through the years, and it's just been amazing the number of people that we see. I think we have something like 10 locations now. When I came, I think we had 3 locations. And, we've just been able to expand and expand. We're actually looking at another site right now that we're going to be expanding to. But it's been interesting to watch God, how he has worked through this ministry in the years, you know, in these last few years, and will continue to work.
Good, good. Tell us a little bit about the work for those who go through, you know, the year-long process at Hebron and what that ministry looks like, how that got started, just some of the background to that.
We actually have addiction programs for men and women. So often Wheeler is known for just reaching out to the homeless, men and women, but they don't realize the fact that we have addiction programs. And that's one of the things that we're I think Julie and I are most excited about, because we see people's lives actually changed. But the women have a program called Higher Ground, and it's I think it's going to be located in our new center when it's finished next May, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But it's right now not too far from here, actually, over on Edward Street is where the Higher Grounds program. Some of you have actually been there and done work for us, which we appreciate. But the men's program, the Hebron program, started back in 2000. And it was a vision I had that I wanted to see men get out of the inner city, out of downtown. At the time, we're at 245 North Delaware with all of our programs. And I could see a guy go out the front door, go around the corner and go to a bar or get the drug of his choice out on the street, out on the sidewalk. And I thought, there's got to be a way to get men out of the city and into a rural setting to get them to really focus on their addiction and to get healthy again. And we had a program, but it was okay, but I thought it could do much better out in a rural setting. And so that's when we decided to start using our camp down by Bloomington, which is, 285 acres, surrounded by 22,000 acres of state forest that we were using for a children's camp. And so we thought, okay, let's do this. And a guy kind of came along that that was his vision too. And the two of us came together and we launched this thing at Camp Hunt, in September of 2000. Just 20 years ago. And I remember going to the board, our board of directors, and I said, this is what I wanted to do. And they kind of looked at me, and they looked at me kind of funny, as most people do anyway. And they said, you want to put addicts at the same place that we have kids? I looked at them, I said, yeah. I think we got nearly 300 acres, so we could separate, which we did, but at one point we realized that, the kids' camp was being overtaken by the Hebron program, and so we moved it to another site, and then eventually we had to do away with all of our youth programs anyway due to some financial constraints back in 2007, 2008. But the Hebron program has taken off. It has really taken off. We just got finished building a new dormitory just this last year. We now have a capacity of 65 men. Yeah, we have capacity of 65 men down there. Right now, we only probably have about 35 or so. And that's kind of, we're still building. We didn't want to go from 35 or 40 up to 65 immediately. We wanted to be able to grow up to it and grow into it. And so we built that. We also built another building down there, a multi-purpose building for gymnasium. Just yesterday, Jim, we had a reunion of all the men that's been through the Hebron program, and I'm not sure how many people were there yesterday, but I know that there's probably a couple hundred people, maybe 125 of those maybe were men who had come through the program. I'm not sure, because there was families, there was staff, but it was really a good time for men just to come back, get reacquainted. And see them reignite some of the fellowship that they had when they were there. So it was really wonderful to see all these men come together yesterday. But Hebron has been a great tool, because we've actually seen families come back together. We've seen families go down there, and I remember seeing a woman one time took her husband down there and said, "Here, you take him. I've had it. I'm going to divorce court because I can't do anything with him anymore. It's up to you to have him." We said, "Well, just hold the phone here a little bit. Give us some time." And several months later, that family was reunited. Those are the things we get excited about.
Yeah, we've it's an intensive program.
Very intensive, yes. It's in your face.
It's not church camp for a year, right? And
yeah.
And Rick and I have talked about this as we get together occasionally. There's been some great success stories, right?
Yes.
And then there's some that just break your heart too, right?
Right.
Some stories.
Right. There's some success stories right here in this church, actually, and And, you know, many of the guys who have come through the program actually become staff members. Some have gone out and been really productive people once again. And it's been an amazing ride. Bert Rhodes, one of our folks here, I don't know if Bert's here tonight or not, he's been one of our greatest, there's Bert back there, he's been one of our greatest volunteers and advocates for the Hebron program. He takes these guys home with him. He was down there yesterday. Bert, do you know how many we had down there at all? Over 200? Okay. So, but it's great to see men whose lives get reconnected to the families. We've just seen drugs and alcohol destroys families. And that's why when I talk to teenagers and kids, you know, if you're tempted with drugs and alcohol, just don't do it, because it destroys. It totally destroys. And we see it on our end of how it destroys. But yet, you know, when Christ comes into the situation, he can turn lives around again. And yeah, you know, the men go through the program. It's now a seven-month program. It's a residential program right at the camp. But there's times that some of the men and women do relapse. That's part of, unfortunately, that's part of the whole process of addiction recovery. There seems to be always relapse involved in it. Now, some people, it doesn't. But many of them it does. And relapse is a learning tool. And so what we tell guys is that when they've relapsed, you already have the toolbox. You know what it takes to get back. You just need to apply those tools. And so the tools are really the Bible and the stuff that they've learned about self-confrontation and all these aspects that they learned in the 7 months that they've been with us. Once they've been with us for 7 months, they can go into what we call our servant leadership training program, where they can serve another 9 months. And that's where I think that often you get the icing on the cake. It's because these guys serve for another 9 months, and that's almost seminary level, you know, training that they're getting. Exciting to see these lives changed.
Rick, tell us just a little bit of what a typical day might look like, both in your role and just what's coming and what's going, what's happening. I know you're gearing up now for winter, right, when things are going to get even a little bit more intense. But what does it look like in a day in the life of ministry there?
Yeah, my day, about at 6:30 every day, it starts a nap. So you didn't even ask about how this was interfering with my daily schedule. Think about those folks overseas, yeah, but don't think about me, Jim. our day is, you know, if the missions start early, they get up, they get going. If they're at the shelter, you know, they can hang around our day room for, you know, the day. If they're in one of our programs, it's a pretty rigid program. It's pretty well mapped out for them. At the Hebron Center down at the camp, a lot of the men actually work in an industry that we have down, building shipping pallets. These are wood shipping pallets, and we make probably about 1,000 a day. Some days we do, some more, some less. But that's an industry that they have, because one of the things we found down there, you just can't give a guy a Bible and send him out in the woods by themselves and say, go heal yourself. But there's also something about working, using their hands. And so they're only in the pallet shop for about 5 hours a day. The rest of the time they're in classes and in perhaps self-confrontation, all kinds of stuff like that, and counseling with men, with some of the staff. So their days are full. Their days are full. The homeless shelter is, hanging around the day room, maybe encouraging people to go out and get, you know, apply for employment that they're supposed to be doing as well. We have chapels in the afternoon for the shelter for men. So we really have a spiritual emphasis. We've got videos, you know, playing in the day room as well. But for me, you know, my day has changed the last few months because of COVID. Because when we came into the whole COVID thing, of course, I was told to go home because I'm one of those that's in the open season for COVID. I was told to go home by my staff, and so that's where I was for about 3 or 4 months. I'm just now getting out. This is the first time Julie and I have been in a in church. We've been doing it from home, it's nice to get back and at least see some warm bodies once again. But it was interesting. The whole COVID thing was kind of interesting because it happened sometime back in March, and there's a lot of fear, as you all know. Everybody was fearful, not knowing what this whole thing brought. And so I was remanded to home. So what we decided to do was anybody on our staff who was 60 or older, they were told to stay home. Well, I didn't realize how many staff members we had over 60 because they said, where's everybody on the front lines? There's nobody on the front lines. We need people, you know, working with the homeless that are coming in. So we really had to start kind of reassigning people from admin who are younger, because if you recall right, they were saying anybody 60 and over, you know, it could likely get it. Younger people aren't getting it. All this stuff has changed through the last few months. And so basically, you know, I got used to video calls, every day, all day, to the point where you're almost exhausted at 10 o'clock at night sometimes, because back then we're very much tuned into it. Anymore, we're a little more relaxed, but back there for 3 months, it was really intense. I was on the phone with, you know, the CDC, with people across the country, with other missions, trying to figure out what they were doing so we could have best practices. And of course, when this all hit, our staff were not protected. They were not protected with any kind of PPEs. You talk about being on the front line. Our staff was out there on the front line. The hospitals, you know, they certainly had the protection. We didn't. And it wasn't until probably about a week, you know, could we even find masks? And thankfully to the church here, I don't know how many masks they made. I know Julie was keeping track of it. I think it was, 5,000 or so, 5,000 plus masks this church made. And we thank you for that. It really helped. It really did. We probably still have some of them in inventory. Because we've been trying to stock up, because we don't know what's going to hit next month. Because they keep saying there's a second wave coming in the middle of October. So we're trying to prepare for that. And I remember at one point, way back in March, we had 900 people under our roofs, 900. And I called Dr. Kane, the director of the public health department. I talked to her directly. I said, Dr. Kane, we have 900 people under our roofs. We have 500 men in one facility. That should only be about 250 people in that building. I said, so we need to get all the people who are 50 and older out of this building and get them somewhere else and get this whole thing thinned down. And she said, you know, that's a really good plan. Now, 50 and over, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, you just said 60. Well, 50 with homeless people, because of their health, we thought were more at risk, because a lot of them aren't very healthy. So we thought, we'll get them out of here. So I called her a couple days later. We're still thinking about that plan. And about 3 or 4 more days went by, and she said, we're still thinking about that plan. Well, 10 days after that first phone call, I got a call from the health department. They said, we need to implement your plan because we just found somebody who tested positive in your mission. So all of a sudden, all this action happens. You know, we were pulling people out. It was mind-boggling at times when, you know, the government decides they want to do something, they do it. So we are having people pulled out all over the place. I think we had them in 3 or 4 other sites by this time. It was just amazing, and I wish they would have done that earlier. You know, we had probably, I think, I just looked at the stats the other day. I think we had 39 people, clients, who tested positive for the virus.
We had, I believe, about 21 staff members who tested positive. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, back in those earlier days of March, we even had the National Guard ready to come in. Because as I was telling Dr. Kane and others at the state level, what if my staff refuses to come in because of this COVID? And they said, that's a good point. Because if your staff, I said, if the staff does not come in, I have to close my doors. And that means that there's going to be 900 people out on the street, and they couldn't afford to do that. And so we had the National Guard. Fortunately, we did not have to use the National Guard, which I'm glad, because sometimes uniforms scare some clients to death. So it was a real trip. It's interesting that if you read anything about some of the stats and that out there, out of Washington, they were expecting 10 to 20,000 homeless people to die with the COVID. 10 to 20,000. That was what was being predicted early on. And so far, across the United States, only 200 have died. I think 216 as of Friday. Now, 216 deaths, that's still a lot of deaths, right? But it's a far distance from 10,000 to 20,000. And we are amazed. It's because the CDC and others think it's because the missions across the country stepped up to the challenge and said, we're going to have clean facilities. I mean, we've got hand-washing stations all over the place that were given to us by the health department. Because one of the things that we find that homeless people don't like to wash their hands, and what was one of the things with COVID, you got to wash your hands. So anyway, it's been a whole interesting ride, Jim, for the last few months, and it's easing up a little bit now. But I think the second wave, it was actually, believe it or not, I think it was back in July. I'm terming October the third wave. And we don't know how drastic that will be. We're praying it's not.
Okay. Rick, tell us just a little about some projects that are going on, some things that you see over the next year, maybe the next few years. You mentioned the women's shelter that's being built. So what are some other things that we might not know about that are kind of on the horizon for Wheeler?
Well, yeah, the Center for Women and Children is under construction. It's scheduled to be done in May. We wish it was done now because it could have really helped with the COVID with social distancing. But if you drive out on East Michigan Street, you'll see a four-story structure, steel structure up. It's coming along very, very well. And, we were able to raise all the money for it, which we thank the Lord for it. It's like a $9 million building that is being built. And once it's done, we'll be able to actually triple our capacity of the number of women that we're keeping now. Some of the other things that we're doing, we actually have another, we have several building projects going on right now. We have a project that we're trying to finish downtown for COVID. We have a building that sits right next to the shelter for men that we never got to phase three. And we just started it this past week. We had trouble getting building permits from the city. Well, I don't know, when we were telling them how important it was because of COVID, that you need to fast track this stuff. So we have a place there that we're totally renovating. It's probably 15, 20, 20,000 square feet. We have all the funding for that. Thank the Lord. It's just been amazing how God is blessing in the funding of these things. And then we have a project going on down at Bloomington. We bought a building down there last year. Timing is just great because our men's shelter down in Bloomington is wall-to-wall people, and it doesn't allow any social distancing down there at all. So we bought a building, and we were able to get the money raised for that one, too, from Bloomington, because we try to raise money in Bloomington for Bloomington operations. So that project is well underway. We're hoping down the pike to build a new facility at the camp again. It may be you know, further out, I don't know, maybe soon or maybe further out, but we'd like to build like a motel type facility so that we can actually bring families back to the camp again. We used to do that a lot. We used to have the families come in to the camp, and they got counseling from our family counselor, because it's sometimes it's when you get a man who has been an addict and he changes, his life changes, he turns his life over to Christ, this wife has this new man to look at, and the family does too. They don't know what to do with him. And so we've really emphasized family counseling on weekends, and we've not been able to do it like wanted to do it. So we're seeking to build a several unit motel unit, so that type thing, that we can bring the families back in and take up on this again. So and then we're mentioned another site that we've got that out on the north side. One of the things, we get donated a lot of stuff. It's, I know you folks give to us. I mean, when I say stuff, I'm talking about clothing and household items. And we try to turn those things into dollars. We have a thrift store here on the south side. Probably some of you have been there, shop. And, you know, please shop there, too. You can shop there, you know. Not a problem. We'll take your money there, too. We're actually have a place out in Noblesville that we're looking at now, starting another store, because we have a lot of donors out there, and there seems to be a big attraction out there that we could actually do well out there with donations and with a store. So in some of this store, Lilly Endowment a couple of years ago gave us some money to do this, and we haven't used it yet, and so we're able to do it for that, you know, use that funding. So it's kind of cool. Have a store for a year without any costs, you know.
Good. Well, just so that you all know, you know, and I will just close up with a question, Rick, about partnership here with LifePoint. But we've your mission dollars have supported multiple projects at Wheeler Mission. We support Wheeler Mission monthly. But with some of our overages, we've been able to multiple times give larger donations to the tune of $10,000, $20,000, I think even $30,000 one time. So again, when you're talking about projects that are $9 million in scope, $30,000 is a very small piece of that. But you've got to have a lot of churches and individuals and others giving those kind of, you know, dollars to make that happen. And so We've been involved in that in terms of missions and your missions dollars.
And that was probably the largest church donation we got to the campaign.
Oh, see, there you go. So that's good to know. So
yes, it is.
So let's just close, Rick. Tell us a little bit. What are some prayer requests that you might have for the mission? Are there some things that LifePoint, in terms of how we could serve? What are some things that you would just maybe some parting words that you might have for the folks that are here that maybe we could then disseminate amongst others at LifePoint?
Well, of course, prayer is the number one thing that we can always use, and Julie's the head of our prayer team, so if you want to join our prayer team, just email her at julialvis@wheelermission.org, and she can put you on the list and receive our prayer requests, you know. But, you know, we continue to pray for, especially for this fall. It's so unknown with the COVID, you know. Winter is coming on, and our numbers always shoot up. And we've told the community, other social providers, that we're limiting the number of people that we're going to take in. We have a problem. We have a difficult time saying no. You know, how do you say no to a woman who's standing there with her two kids and the snow was flying? And she's saying she's living in her car. So, you know, pray that God would open up, you know, people's hearts, that, you know, they can find places to go, and you know, and it may not be with us, although it's an opportunity for us to share, but it's a difficult situation that we find ourselves in, especially with COVID, because the homeless advocates don't like our congregate sheltering. they like non-congregate. And perhaps maybe you've read in the news here lately that the city's now putting people up in hotel rooms. They don't have the money to sustain it. They do not have the money to sustain the plan that they are implementing. And it'll be gone very soon. And so that throws all of these people back on us. Hundreds. And so we're trying to gear up for more of that. But how can you help us? Prayer. That's the number one thing. And, you know, if you got ability to volunteer, we're now taking volunteers back. We actually had to shut volunteers off for several weeks or months because we didn't want people bringing the virus into us either. And so we had one group of volunteers who made sandwiches for us for lunches, lunch sacks. We had 20,000 of those made by people across Indianapolis, which was amazing. Don't tell the health department that because they probably wouldn't like us having sandwiches made in your kitchens because they want them to be made in professional kitchens. You know, those types of things. Look on our website. Go to WheelerMission.org and look at the volunteer opportunities. And it may be something that you fit into that you'd really like to do. And so we appreciate the people of LifePoint and stepping up and helping, like I said, with these masks. It's been incredible. We've appreciated that. Now, we've got a book. I can't forget that. There's a book out in the foyer out there. Please take one. And if they run out there, come out in my car, and I probably got another case or two in the car. but it was a book that we printed and published 2 years ago. It's the story of Wheeler Mission. It was for 125th anniversary. You know, Jim's already got a copy. He's already read it. Your favorite chapter was probably chapter 5, wasn't it?
It had to be, yeah, certainly. Yes. A chapter on Rick and his ministry there, and written primarily by Julie, not just that chapter, the entire book. So
she did not write chapter 5.
Okay, there you go.
Got it. Okay. If you want her to sign your book, she'd sign it for you.
As the author, yeah. Well, Rick, thank you. I mean, we do appreciate, obviously, your ministry and all your staff's ministry. And again, you all don't need to be told how vital a ministry like this is in a city like Indianapolis. And, you know, when we're going to bed, the vast majority of us here in our warm or cool homes every single night, there are hundreds and hundreds of men and women who are not, right? They have no place to go. And Wheeler Mission is a place for them to go. And again, as Rick started, and I just want to emphasize here, they hear the gospel at Wheeler Mission. It isn't just, as if just would be the correct word there, I suppose, but it isn't just social ministry. That's vital, but that is a primary platform to care for people, to give them the opportunity to share the gospel and for people's lives to be transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ, which they have seen happen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So it's just a vital, vital ministry, one that we're pleased to be partnered with you all in. And thanks for skipping your nap time and being here tonight. So
you're welcome.